Good morning, and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I hope everybody's enjoying this unseasonably warm weather, and thanks for coming today. My name is Chris Pesky, and I'll be the representative from the church board today. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. The Green Sanctuary Committee will meet today after the service at 11:45. In classroom number one, please contact Jerry Flakis for any, if you have any questions. Today is the day, start of our annual Time, Talent, and Treasure silent auction. Please see the tables in the social hall afterwards to look through the variety of offerings that are there. There's also a special offering from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of North Bay in Napa, California. That's to benefit their congregation. But if our bid was the winning bid, we would possibly get money from that as well. See Kevin or Amy C. For further details. Join us for a gathering this afternoon after the service at Lapham Peak State Park. We will be heading over there starting at noon. Directions are in the order of service. Please see Yvonne or Mike Fort for further information. And lastly, LifeWays is the on-site child care that is here during the week. They currently have openings for children ages 2 to 5. There's leaflets in the foyer that you can get if you would like, interested in that. They have a nurturing environment and offer organic meals with lots of outside time. At this time, take a moment to say hi to everyone. If you are visiting us today, we would like to particularly welcome you. Please sign in the guest ledger and the visitors table in the foyer. There's a variety of information about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that people may have about Unitarian Universalism, our church, or becoming a member. If you are visiting with your children, it is our custom for children to remain in the service until after the offertory, at which time they can go to the religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along and observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the foyer if you need child care during the service. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, would you please, if you would like to, we would like it if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so as well. We would really enjoy meeting you. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion about the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope everyone finds this morning's service interesting. Our speaker today is Susan Taylor. Susan started studying Unitarian Universalism at a church in Oak Park, Illinois in the 1980s. She also studies mysticism through the Church of Religious Science in Milwaukee and is enrolled in a program to become a minister. She is a seeker of truth about love, life, and happiness. She will be giving the sermon today titled Love Is and Love Is All There Is.
Today, there's not a cloud in the sky, and palm trees dance in the breeze. But there's a stillness of the world as wind overwhelms me. I'm forced to the ground, held down on the grass. I stare at the green and watch the colors contrast. A lively mood set by orange pastel tones that fade into the sun. And place our hearts in one zone, I squint my eyes and uphold a breath. Release all with one exhale through my very own chest. Life is short, but you'll surely find, with love there's no perfection, but it's ever so divine. And now we'll have the chalice lighting. And if you'll join with me with the congregational response in your order of service. May love shine through for us today. May light of reason guide our way. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Let's start.
Love shine through us today. May light of reason guide.
Now's the time that we read our story for all ages, so any of the kids, if you'd like to come up front here and sit with us, I'll read a story.
Mm-hmm.
The name of our story today is The Kissing Hand. Chester Raccoon stood at the edge of the forest and cried. "I don't want to go to school," he told his mother. "I want to stay home with you. I want to play with my friends and play with my toys and read my books and swing on my swing. Please, may I stay home with you?" Mrs. Raccoon took Chester by the hand and nuzzled him on the ear. "Sometimes we have to do things we don't want to do," she told him gently, "even if they seem strange and scary at first. But you will love school once you start. You'll make new friends and play with new toys, read new books, and swing on new swings. Besides," she added, "I know a wonderful secret that will make your nights at school seem as warm and cozy as your days at home." Chester wiped away his tear and looked interested. "A secret? What kind of secret?" "A very old secret," said Mrs. Raccoon. "I learned it from my mother, and she learned it from hers. It's called the kissing hand." "The kissing hand?" asked Chester. "What's that?" "I'll show you." Mrs. Raccoon took Chester's left hand and spread open his tiny fingers into a fan. Leaning forward, she kissed Chester right in the middle of his palm. Chester felt his mother's kiss rush up his hand, up his arm, and into his heart. Even his silky black mask tingled with a special warmth. Mrs. Raccoon smiled. "Now," she told Chester, "whenever you feel lonely and need a little lovin' from home, just press your hand to your cheek and think, 'Mommy loves you. Mommy loves you.' And that very kiss will jump to your face and fill you with warm, toasty thoughts." She took Chester's hand and carefully wrapped his fingers around the kiss. "Now, do be careful not to lose it," she teased him. "But don't worry. When you open your hand and wash your food, I promise the kiss will stick." Chester loved his kissing hand. Now he knew his mother's love would go with him wherever he went, even to school. That night, Chester stood in front of his school and looked thoughtful. Suddenly, he turned to his mother and grinned. "Give me your hand," he told her. Chester took his mother's hand in his own hand and unfolded her large, familiar fingers into a fan. Next, he leaned forward and kissed the center of her hand. "Now you have a kissing hand, too," he told her. And with a gentle "goodbye" and "I love you," Chester turned and danced away. Mrs. Raccoon watched Chester scamper across a tree limb and enter school. And as the hoot owl rang in the new school year, she pressed her left hand to her cheek and smiled. The warmth of Chester's kiss filled her heart with special words. "Chester loves you," it sang. "Chester loves you." Thank you for coming up. And you can all go back to your seats now. Thank you. And now if you would like to turn to hymn number 325, "Love Makes a Bridge," and stand as you're willing and able, we'll sing. Thank you.
Okay, now it's time for our offertory. Divine love flowing through me blesses and increases all that I have, all that I give, and all that I receive. I do give thanks that this is so, and so it is.
Divine love heals all. God is unconditional love, and this love is the essence of my being. My heart is the heart of God, and I see all people through the eyes of love. In the light of spirit, any discord is dissolved, and I am freed from my criticism, judgment, or unkind thoughts or feelings about myself or others. I know the relationship I have with God brings me closer to divine love. The One Presence is guiding and directing me every step of the way. I enjoy harmonious, loving relationships with everyone, whether near or far. I see myself and those I love as joyful, loving, and healthy experiences of spirit. Every relationship is a sacred opportunity for me to grow and expand into consciousness. Now is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns with each other in the spiritual community. If you have a joy or concern that you'd like to share, raise your hand and the usher will bring you the microphone. Then speak your name and briefly tell us what your joy or concern is. And I'll light a candle for you as a symbol of our congregation's thoughts and prayers for you. And in our tradition, I'll light our first candle for the unrest and unhappiness that is in the world right now, may love and joy come to the world.
Can you light a candle for my friend Kimberly, who started chemotherapy this week for breast cancer?
I'm Carlin Wagner. Could you please light a candle for my baby cousin, who was 47, who unexpectedly passed with a heart attack last week, and light a candle for his family, and particularly my dear Aunt Trudy and Uncle Sherm, who... I'm sure that's the worst pain to lose a child before them.
Hi, I'm Barb. I have a joy and a concern. A good friend's mother passed away this week. My prayers for the family. And my joy is that on either side of me are my two sisters who have come up to celebrate my sister's birthday and just to have a wonderful weekend together.
And I'll light our last candle for the joys and concerns that we keep in our heart.
And now, if you'll join with me in a reading for meditation, I exemplify love. In the heart of all is the hidden beloved, the divine love that enfolds us, merges with us, and ushers us into the unity that is the truth of all being. We can never be alone when we discover the great love secreted in the depth of our being. Wherever we are, our beloved is with us. To live in this love is to be in bliss. This feeling evokes the serenity of a stream, skipping over stones, leaping over waterfalls, and gurgling through gullies in a pure ecstasy of being. In doing so, divine love flows through us and shapes the world in which we dwell. I am divine love. I flow in the ecstasy of unity of all things. I bring this identity of love into all that I do. And now if you'll turn to your programs, there's a centering hymn, and join with me in What the World Needs Now.
Love.
sure everyone remembers that song. So for today, you might have heard me say during my time here, during Joys and Concerns, sometimes I'll say, love is and love is all there is. And before I begin, I want you to know that I am not an expert on love. I don't want anybody calling me Dr. Love or emailing me for advice on love. I'm in the search for truth, and I struggle with that subject just as much as anybody, if not more. And it's also a complex subject, one that few people seem to get a handle on, even in a lifetime, much less the 20 minutes or so that I'll be talking to you here. As M. Scott Peck explains in The Road Less Traveled, when we try to examine love, we're toying with mystery. We'll be looking at what is the unexaminable, and to know really the unknowable, because love is too large and too deep to ever be truly understood, or measured, or limited within the framework of words. Any attempt to do so will be inadequate. I think we express this sense of mystery by the conflicting things we say about love that you'll hear. Love is blind. Love is all you need. You know, what the world needs is love. Love is a battlefield. So I don't know about you guys, but I wonder, well, what the heck is it then? I mean, really, it's amazing anybody can figure that out. If we could fully understand love, it's then hard to comprehend it because it gives us such great joy. And yet, at the same time, love can cause great pain. Anyone who has gained a lost love knows this well. Today, and against this backdrop, I'll attempt, however humble, to explain what love is not, and then go on to define what love is, again, using The Road Less Traveled as kind of my framework, since it's a big subject. And I'll finish with an overview of divine or pure love as I see it. So let's start with what love is not. Love is not dependency. A story in A Road Less Traveled illustrates this, where Scott Peck tells the story of a young man who said, and I quote, "My mother loved me so much that she wouldn't let me take the school bus to school until my senior year in high school. Even then, I had to beg her to let me go. I guess that she was afraid that I would get hurt. So she drove me to and from school every day, which was very hard on her. She really loved me," end of quote. Peck had to teach this young man, and he was a psychiatrist, that his mother might have been motivated by something other than love, and that what seemed to be love is often not love at all. One of the major distinguishing features between love and not love at all is the conscious or unconscious purpose in the mind of the giver. Here, in this case, the mother may have been motivated to overprotect her son because it helped her feel needed. And according to Peck, that is not really love. Dependency is the inability to experience wholeness or to function adequately without the certainty that one is being actively cared for by another. Now, of course, we all have dependency needs and feelings. The desire to be babied, to be nurtured without effort on our parts, to be cared for by persons stronger than us who have our own interests truly, truly at heart. And I know this is true for myself. Some days I just have one of those bad days, and I just wish somebody else would take over while I check out. But no matter how strong we are, no matter how caring and responsible and adult-like, if we look clearly into ourselves, we'll find that all of us have a wish to be cared for a change. But most of us have these desires. They don't rule our lives. It might be that we have a bad day or whatever. Maybe we've had a loss and we need somebody to console us. But it's not the predominant theme of our lives or our existence, and that's what makes the difference between dependency and not. These needs do not dictate the quality of our existence overall day to day. And when we have something more than this, and when this need does rule our life and the quality of it, we are dependent. So the conscious or unconscious purpose in the mind of the person giving the love is what tells your motives, and that is what determines whether you are truly loving or not. Second, love is not self-sacrifice. It's not the mother who took her son to school, even though it was very hard on her every day. Love is rather an extension of the self. Genuine love is a self-replenishing activity. It enlarges you when you give love to another person. It fills you. It doesn't deplete you. True love means sort of a quid pro quo. The aim is always spiritual growth of the self and others. And in non-love, it is always something else, like a need to be needed. Third, and this is one of my personal challenges, love is not falling in love. According to Peck, the experience of falling in love is a sex-linked erotic experience. We do not fall in love with our children, in contrast, even though we may love them very deeply, and we do not fall in love with our friends, even though we may care for them greatly. We only fall in love when we are consciously or unconsciously sexually motivated. And we know the media likes to play on this aspect of love quite a bit. Unlike true love, falling in love is not an act of will. According to Peck, falling in love may capture us at times when we're not seeking it, when it's inconvenient or even undesirable. It's really just a bad idea. And we're as likely to fall in love with someone that we're ill-matched to, as well as someone more suitable. So it kind of has a random effect. We may not even like or admire the object of our passion yet. Try as we might, we may not be able to fall in love with a person for whom we deeply respect and with whom a deep relationship would in all ways be desirable. Yet the experience of falling in love is not immune to discipline, according to Dr. Peck. We can act contrary to how we feel, and it will almost always involve struggle and suffering. But discipline and will can only control the falling in love experience. It cannot create it. We can choose how to respond to the experience of falling in love, but we cannot choose the experience itself. The experience of falling in love is temporary. No matter whom we fall in love with, we sooner or later fall out of love if the relationship continues long enough. We may still love the person, but the ecstatic lovingness that characterizes the experience of falling in love always passes. In fact, this is when lasting love happens, when we do not feel this ecstatic lovingness, but when we act this way in spite of it. And I disagree with Peck on this, that I believe that feeling of lovingness and passion involves energy and intention, and that you can bring about those feelings even in a long-term or a lasting relationship. Nevertheless, falling in love really has little to do with nurturing one's spiritual development, and that, to Peck, is the pinnacle of true love, the nature of love itself. So what love is it's not dependency. It's not looking for another person for your lifeblood, for your quality of life. It's not self-sacrificing yourself so you're depleted. Rather, you're doing acts that nourish and enhance you. And it's not really falling in love. It's acting as though you're in love and with lovingness, even though you may not have those initial feelings or bursts of love. So if that's not what love is, what is love? Love is the will to extend yourself for the purpose of nurturing your own, and we'll talk about that, because you can't nurture another person's spirituality unless you nurture your own. So it's the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. And love always involves free choice. No one makes you do it. The act of extending yourself when you are loving, it takes effort and it takes action. When we love someone, our love becomes real through not just what we're thinking, but our efforts. It's when we take an extra step or walk an extra mile on behalf of someone else. Sometimes this means we act loving when we don't feel like it or when we don't want to, but we choose to. Love is a circular process. When you extend yourself, it's part of an evolutionary process. When you extend your limits, you've grown into a larger state of being. The act of loving is an act of self-evolution. Even when the purpose of it is someone else's growth, it enlarges you. Love includes self-love with love for the other. Since I'm human and you're human, to love means to love myself as well as you. To be dedicated to human spiritual development is to be dedicated to the race of which we are a part. And this means dedication to our own development as well as others. We're incapable of loving another unless we love ourselves, just as we are incapable of teaching our children self-discipline unless we are ourselves. Self-disciplined. Not only do self-love and love of others go hand in hand, they're indistinguishable. Because again, as you love others, your own sense of love is expanded. And here's an interesting tip. People can love inanimate objects, because I've often wondered about this, like money or, for me, Cold Stone Coffee Lover's ice cream. I mean, I get feelings of love when I eat that stuff. But when acquiring wealth or eating ice cream becomes ends in themselves rather than a means to spiritual growth, it's not true love. Because true love, the true end of love is spiritual growth or evolution of yourself and another. It's not the creamy sensation of ice cream as it goes down your throat. So in this context, love is extending yourself and enlarging yourself in the process of love, nurturing your own and others' spiritual growth, and, as I said, it involves free will. Divine love. Divine love, for me, is true love. It's the love that's always there and always available, in spite of everything around me and in spite of everyone. For me, it's the love of God, and I know some people here have different views on that, but for me, it's love, and it's all around me, it's everywhere, and it's through me. I believe that I'm a creative expression of God's love, that I am a manifestation of God's love in everything I think, everything I say, and everything I do. I'm not God. There's a distinction here. I don't believe I'm God, but I believe that you and I share the same consciousness, the one mind with God. And again, everything we think, say, and do is a reflection of whether we're in sync with this consciousness or not. When we're willing to extend ourselves, then according to Peck, for the purpose of nurturing our own or another's spiritual growth, we would be in sync with God's mind, the one consciousness. Divine love is always available to everyone, all the time. It's just a matter of accessing this consciousness. Highly conscious people then would experience it more than less conscious people. Consciousness is a matter of free will. Freedom of will means the ability to do, say, and think as you wish, and to express things as you personally desire. To love, then, involves free will. No one makes you feel or act lovingly. No one holds a gun to your head and makes you do it. It's a choice. Love is, and love is all there is. Since God made the universe, and since God is love, it can only contain love. Only good and loving kindness, follow me all the days of my life. There is one consciousness, a divine mind, of which we are all a part. As such, there can be no duality, no hate versus love. We experience love and hate only because we perceive a presence of duality rather than unity. But since God is one mind, one consciousness, love is, and love is all there is, because God is love. Love is not dependency. Love is not self-sacrifice. Love is not falling in love. Love is nurturing yourself and others on a spiritual journey, even when you don't feel like it. And it's all done with free will. Divine love is the catalyst for loving thoughts, feelings, and actions. I believe we are manifestations of God's love. God's love is all around us, in the trees and the flowers, in the work that we do, in the good deeds, even when we hurt people. It's in all of our relationships. It's all around the world. Love is, and love is all there is. And so it is.
You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Come, let me love you, let me give my life to you. Let me drown in your laughter, let me die in your arms. Beside you, let me always be with you. Come, let me love you. Come, love me Blue ocean.
You fill up my senses. Come fill me again.
Okay, this is time for the polylog. The congregation can offer their reflections and personal insights. Please be brief so all can share. And they'll be passing microphones around. If you want to participate, just raise your hand.
I'm John. Thank you, Susan, for sharing your thoughts with us and giving us a chance to kind of provokes our own thoughts. I've heard described before about, you know, love being like a manifestation of God and sort of the force that holds us all together and stuff. One thing it's hard for me a little bit, though, is for all the evil part of it, you know, what happened to God there, and I'm not looking for necessarily an answer or anything, I'm just kind of thinking aloud here, and how that is. And then also, in my own mind, there's still different kinds of love, you know, the love, even though you talked about the lust, different type of lust versus love, but like the love for my wife is different. Even beyond the lust is different than maybe the love for my kids or a friend. And then, of course, that's to me different than the love of all mankind and the love of the people, like in the congregation and what you're willing to do, or the love of a dog, I should say, which is, I mean, and I don't quite know how to even describe that, because when you get really attached to a pet, it feels like love, and yet it's kind of different too. So, but I guess the whole thing was, as you brought this out, it was interesting to think about all that, and I do appreciate that.
Sure. Thanks. Hi, my name's Lynn. We had Socrates Cafe last night, and our question was, what is the basis of your moral code? And like all Socrates, we don't necessarily answer the question, but that's really not the point. But I think this is a good question, what is love? And I think you should be there.
that would be a long session.
I'm Barbara. And rather than a comment, I really have a question. When you were saying that the love of money or the love of your ice cream leads to spiritual growth, I don't see the connection, to be honest.
Right. Well, I said that that's not true love, because it doesn't. When that's just a unless the end of what you're doing, the means of it, is to enhance your own or another spiritual growth, that really isn't love. And I was saying, I was just contrasting that even though I may feel like I really love that ice cream, and I might feel happiness and joy when I'm eating it, that's not really love. You know, because people say all kinds of things. I love that ice cream. I love that song. You know, and that's just an expression. It's not really love.
My name is Mike. One of the things that our minds like to do is to absorb everything under one concept, if possible, because it makes things easy. And I've always found one of the issues I have with the divinity is the fact that God likes to absorb all of our love and our goodness and whatever into himself. and it kind of like depletes any of the uniqueness or difference between us as being a good thing. As you mentioned in your talk, and I think your talk was very good and accurate, duality is seen as something bad, when in fact duality or triplicate or quadruplicate or however many times you want to multiply, multiplicity itself is kind of what adds the spice to love. And otherwise, I'm going to fall into the trap of simply loving other people or thinking it's love because they're like me, when in fact, I love other people precisely because they're not me.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that intangibleness that I also struggle with, and that multiplicity that is out there. And that has to do with free will. I mean, I agree. Yeah, that's what's why it's so hard to define what love is, because often for me, it isn't what somebody might say it might be. It comes down to a feeling, really, for me. And, you know, how do you describe that? So.
Hello, I'm Bruce. Many years ago, I had an English teacher that wanted us to write on some fairly difficult topics. And one of the things he did to encourage us to take on these topics is he gave us the writings of J. Krishnamurti. And Krishnamurti's approach to love was similar to how you started, in that he said it's such a very difficult thing to define. But we can certainly say what it is not. So I really appreciated how you started. He went on quite a bit on what it is not. And I'd encourage anybody who wanted to pursue that to look up some of his writings.
Hi, I'm Diane. I've been here for about, it's going on 2 years, and I found that since my husband died, I'm reaching out to more and more people, and I find that my love grows and is extended to so many new friends, and it isn't diminished by the number. It's just amazing. I can love 100, 200 people, and I'm thrilled about it.
Thanks for sharing.
Hi, my name is Angela, and Josh and I are just starting our journey together. We're engaged, and my cousin once asked me why I think he's the one, and I said because I not only like his good things, but I like the bad things about him too, because that's what makes him him. And she was kind of confused as to why I did, but I said if he didn't have his faults, he wouldn't be him, so I like both his faults and his good things, and that's why I like him. Or love him, I should say.
Hi, I'm Yvonne. Perhaps love is really a deep connection and caring, and really is that connectedness, because that's why, you know, there's so much pain with love, because you're connected.
I really appreciate the ending of this service with beautiful pictures of a landscape, and I see a love there.
Two, I know I'm not supposed to say this, but I love Annie's song, and I'm so glad you included it. Made me want to cry.
Sure. Well, Scott Peck is just one person with one idea, so you could love it.
I'm Eric. I whispered to Sue a minute ago that I really don't like John Denver.
Yeah.
I guess and I'm not going to, I'm certainly not going to speak against love, and not in this context. But I worry that we're just a little too comfortable and a little too saccharine or suburbia sometimes when it comes to issues like this. And I personally feel, to start from the premise of love is good and then develop that, I think it's great, and I really appreciate the service, Susan. But for me, I think there's a lot of pain associated with it, a lot of hurt, and I just think it's complicated, and the world is not potpourri, and I worry when we feel too comfortable with it.
My name is Fran, and I don't know if I'm going to express this exactly as I mean it, but, you know, in essence, we're all very isolated. You can never, the only hurt skin you can really ever get into is your own. And sometimes I think love is searching for a way to connect outside of ourselves. For me, I find it when I'm walking in the woods, in nature, there's this connectedness where I suddenly can feel that I can't even put it into words, and I know a lot of people share that. But sometimes it can be kind of terrifying to realize that you are kind of encased in your own brain. You really can't enter into someone else's. I mean, we use language to try and communicate, the language of words, of emotion, of touch, of sensation. But what it all boils down to is really, you're caught inside yourself. I don't know if I'm expressing this exactly, but to me, I think a search for love is that search for connectedness. So you gaze into the eyes of your dog or your cat, or the other day, this little fawn almost came up and touched me. And it was that kind of connect, to me, that feeling that just infuses through you when you connect with either another person or nature. Is perhaps love that search to be connected and not so isolated within your own skin? I don't know.
Hi, my name is Julie. And what Eric said made me think of a conversation I had recently with my teenage daughter, who's going through the trials and tribulations of being a teenager. And I said, okay, Emily, here's your choice. You can either live on a desert island, not engage with anybody, and be lonely, but not get hurt. Or you can be a human being and have relationships and have the potential of losing those relationships and experiencing the pain that goes with those. And she said, you mean there is no happy medium? And I said, nope, that's life.
Sorry, just one more. I know everybody wants to get out to the nice day, but I really like the Buddhist conceptualization of attachment and how, and when I first heard that term, I didn't understand it at all, because how can you not be attached to your kids, for example? But I've been reading a book lately that defines attachment in a Buddhist way that talks very much about the desire to truly support the other person, truly support their development, whether you call that spiritual growth. I don't necessarily like that wording, because it can be their growth in going back to school, or their growth in having time to go for a run in the woods and taking care of the kids so they can do that. So, you know, that versus this kind of dependency or this need to be, to own, or this need to use other people for what they can do for you. So if you're always looking at the individuals around you about whether they're nice to you or whether they do something for you, and you're looking at that relationship as what they can do for you, that's attachment. And it really, and the fact that then life is impermanent is then extremely painful, because when those people who do for you go away, there's always going to be a sense of loss, but it seems to me that looking at it that way, as not looking at the people around you as to how you can use them, is a way to understand attachment versus love.
Thank you. One more.
The idea of God is love is powerful and hopeful, and to me means the best part of us. That, and I was reading in our hymnal, may the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in and among us. To me, that's what we're talking about, that God is love, that is our best selves.
Okay, and on that point, Laura's going to come up and give the closing words.
I am a being of light. Spirit is the all in all, the universal one. It is the source of all good because it is the all good. And more importantly, the love I feel in my heart. I am the personalization of my creator on this planet. I am a being of light. I create my life with divine source as I am birthed and live in love, goodness, and power. I release any pain or suffering I may have experienced, and I learn from it. I name everything I attract through the law of attraction a gift, because I know it blesses my life in some way. If I look for the good, I find it, for I know in every stone is a nugget of gold. This is my belief, and the universe does unto me as I believe.